Hey folks, thanks for checking out the podcast this week. Before we get to my guest, I want to just tell you about my YouTube channel, youtube.com/PaulMercurio. Check it out when you get a second. Doing a couple of different series of videos there. One called Our National Nightmare. I'll let you guess what that might be about. And also one with legendary radio host in Philadelphia, John DiBella. He's been a friend of mine and just a really, really funny guy. We've been doing something called Two Guys on Zoom. That's the best title we could come up with. We're not that creative. So check that out. And please subscribe to the channel if you haven't. Send it around. Tell your friends also. Have them subscribe if you can. We appreciate it. YouTube.com/PaulMercurio. That way I can tell my mom I get a lot of subscribers and she'd be proud of me for leaving Wall Street to be a comedian. And my guest this week, CNN host of Reliable Sources, Brian Stelter. We talk about Fox News, the inner workings of it, the media overall. Really, really fascinating conversation with him. Enjoy, Brian. My guest this week is someone whose work I really admire. He's anchor of Reliable Sources every Sunday on CNN, chief media correspondent for CNN, a New York Times bestselling author, has a new book out, Hoax, Donald Trump, Fox News, and the Dangerous Distortion of Truth, Brian Stelter. Great to have you on, Brian.
Well, the pleasure is all mine. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. It's a really terrific book and an important book, and very glad you wrote it. And I just wanted to jump in, and what struck me in this was, you know, that Roger Ailes is a key player in this. And you said, and I'm quoting, "Most people I talk to wish Roger Ailes were still there." For what reason that he would stand up to Trump? Like, what is that about?
Yeah, I feel uncomfortable even saying it out loud, you know, because Ailes was a predator. He abused his staff, abused his company. And yet, there are many staffers who miss him and wish he were still there. And that is because, you know, at the end of the day, he was a strong leader. He ruled with an iron fist. And there's nobody really firmly in charge anymore. Mm-hmm. And the network has suffered as a result. So I would say that the ghost of Roger Ailes does loom very large, even though he was forced out of the company 4 years ago.
Well, how would he push back? You know, I had Jeff Fager, the executive producer, former executive producer of 60 Minutes on my show, and he told me a story about, you know, 60 Minutes had been doing a piece just on Trump in general. This was before he was running, and he had a rally somewhere. This was well before he was actually running for president. And I guess they shot some of the rally and they got a shot where there or an event, and there were a lot of empty seats, and Trump saw that and got very upset and claimed that, you know, CBS had an agenda against him and wouldn't talk to Fager for like years. And so when someone's that strong, like I know Ailes was a strong person, but how could he keep Trump in check? Did you get any sense of that?
Well, I think Ailes did that during the campaign by putting out statements. When Megyn Kelly was attacked by Trump, Ailes pushed back, sometimes even canceled Trump's scheduled TV interviews. Maybe that's the biggest thing you can do if you're a newsman. You can deprive the Trump of airtime, which is his oxygen. So Ailes certainly did that on more than one occasion. Of course, this is all hypothetical, though. No one knows what Ailes would have done once Trump were elected, right? Maybe he would have been much more respectful and sycophantic. But certainly we know that during the elections, to the campaign season at least, Ailes was willing to stand up to Trump.
Right. And you've said, I mean, sort of Ailes brought that on himself because he did not really have a plan for succession intentionally, maybe that. So he just left the leadership vacuum because he didn't want others.
Well, that's right. Yeah. And that happens oftentimes in these big companies where the boss doesn't set up a strong number two. But I think when we talk about this lack of leadership, it is largely Roger's fault. And I want to make that clear.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. In your mind, after the research you did and the interviews extensive on this, was there a turning point where Fox kind of sold its soul to Donald Trump in your mind, or was it sort of a slow process over time?
I think it was a process over time, definitely not a single moment, not a single meeting. You know, it was what happens whenever there's a power vacuum. Someone's going to fill it or something is going to fill it. And in this case, it was Donald Trump that filled it, slowly but surely. A lot of this has to do with the audience. And I think we can't really talk about Fox without talking about the viewers and what the viewers want. the viewers, by and large, want pro-Trump opinion. They want the propaganda more than they want the news. And I think all the anchors, the reporters, the hosts, they all saw that and recognized it and reacted to it.
Do you find, you know, you sort of made the point, you know, that it could actually hurt Trump to have a propaganda network on his side. I was interested to hear that, because what are your thoughts behind that?
Well, this is the core argument that I make in Hoax, that when Trump's fans on TV try to help him, they actually hurt him. And they hurt him by feeding him misinformation, by confusing him, by stoking chaos, by sowing the seeds of the Ukraine scandal that led to his impeachment. There are all these times when Trump gets misinformed by Fox and it hurts him. You know, also in a broader sense, Fox encourages Trump to only appeal to the Trump base, which, as we know, is not enough to get reelected. So I think we could imagine an alternative narrative of the Trump years, where Trump was being fed high quality information by Fox and being encouraged to broaden his tent and reach out to skeptical voters. But no, that's not what happened. Instead, he started with the crowd size gate and it went downhill from there.
Say anything you want about Trump. He's not a dumb guy. He knows that he needs more than his base to win. Do you think he's just in denial that this misinformation and these lies and truth will land with those beyond his base who are, you know, on the fence or just hated Hillary, so they voted for him? Or do you think that he just doesn't care and feels that he's got enough in the base to get him in again?
I'm reluctant to get inside Trump's brain.
Yeah.
For a number of reasons. But I think we have to view this through the lens of someone who watches Fox News 6+ hours a day. When you're obsessed and addicted with Fox, you're getting a certain kind of message over and over again, that this is real America and you should fear the cities and you should be skeptical of immigration. This message over again is what drives Trump. So I think in many ways it's Fox that sets the agenda for Trump, not the other way around.
Yeah, you know, when Shep Smith left, obviously he had issues with the direction of the network. You know, you've said, quote, these calculations are right there at the surface. There are real moral and ethical struggles going on at the network. Was that at all a wake-up call for the network? It seems not, you know, because you've got Laura Ingraham and you've got especially Tucker Carlson just going full bore at this point. But was there any sort of, let's take a breath, maybe Shep Smith has something here internally, you think?
Yeah, I think internally there's a couple different levels of this. Certainly there's an awareness that there's been an exodus of talent. Shep Smith is the biggest name, but others have left as well. Carl Cameron, Catherine Herridge, Adam Housley, correspondents and anchors who couldn't take it anymore. And they all had slightly different reasons for leaving, but they didn't think they belonged to Fox in the Trump years. So there is a recognition of that, right? When you see empty cubicles and empty offices, you can see what's happening. But I think there's also this other pressure, which is to feed what the audience wants, that viewers don't want Shep Smith. In fact, a lot of Fox viewers turned to the channel when he was on. They preferred the pro-Trump propaganda.
You know, you make that point in the book about the audience being radicalized, and you say you had a longtime commentator say to you that the audience has been radicalized, and the veteran staffers say, I feel like Fox has been held hostage by its audience. And I can understand that. Is it sort of like, you know, they've made a pact with the devil, so to speak, and they can't get out of it now? Or how did that come about? How do they get themselves out of that dilemma, or do they?
Yeah, this is complicated, right? Because I think a lot of folks would say, don't have any sympathy for these people at Fox News. They've made their own bed. I think what I would say to that is Fox is a big place with a lot of different people in a lot of different positions. Some are journalists who just want to try to report the news and feel squeezed and suffocated by what's happening at the network. You know, because what happens is this is all about incentive structures, right? At all of our jobs, we have incentives. My incentive, I think, is to get the facts right, be as careful and accurate as possible, and hold on to my audience. I think the incentives at Fox are different. The incentives are to skew the news, to stop the news, because the news is often bad for Trump. And bad news for Trump is bad news for Fox, right? Viewers on Fox want to hear that he's a hero, that he's the hero of the story, even when he's not. And it creates this perverse incentive structure to cover up the news as opposed to chase the news.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, I understand the people that left the network. You know, I was going on Fox fairly regularly, you know, having worked on The Daily Show, et cetera, and sort of, you know, this is sort of an area that I work in. And I go on Sean Hannity's show, among others. And, you know, this was before Trump. So it was clearly a right-leaning network. And I would go on and Sean would sort of poke me and go, oh, you're a liberal. You work with Jon Stewart. And then we'd have, you know, a back and forth. And, you know, I defend some liberal points, et cetera, et cetera. But it wasn't this vitriol. And then it turned a corner. And I basically said to myself, I can't keep going on the network because I can't morally, ethically, I can't buy into this person that they're supporting so fervently. And I just saw it. And I've got friends that still work there. And, you know, look, people need a paycheck. I get it. I'm not judging them. But I do think it's rooted in maybe Fox feels outnumbered by MSNBC and CNN, and it's the us versus them, unfortunately. And I worry that we can't go back, right? That it's become so us versus them, not just in terms of the media and the media outlets, but just politically in the country, that Don Jr. is supposedly in the wings to be groomed next, okay? Whoever, that someone takes this playbook of Trump and just continues it, saying, well, it worked for Trump, it'll work for me. Can we go back? Can it become less incendiary, you think?
I don't think we're going to snap back to 2015 or 2016 anytime soon, but I do think there are ways to lower the temperature rather than raise the temperature. And frankly, I think that's all we can hope for, all we can ask for. Because clearly there's a market for what Fox is selling. There's clearly actually a big audience for it. Mm-hmm. If Trump loses in November, maybe he'll launch his own network or start his own show. Mm-hmm. And there might be an audience for that. But I actually think Fox has more power than Trump. I'm not sure how well he would do on his own.
You know, Chris Wallace to me is always somebody that I feel like is attempting to at least be somewhat balanced and a voice of reason at Fox. Do you feel like he's sort of at least a voice, and how does he get to exist in that environment given how one-sided it is?
Well, Fox News is a news operation as well as a political operation. And in hoax, I argue that the news operation has been kind of swallowed up and really hurt by the propaganda. But it is there. There are reporters trying their best and breaking news. And Chris Wallace is the best example of this, right? He's the best exception that proves the rule. He stands out like a thumb that's getting sore and sore and sore. Is sore a word? I don't know. It's more sore and more sore. and I think he knows it, right? He knows it, but he knows he's there providing an alternative point of view to what's heard most of the rest of the time on Fox.
Yeah. Social media, the ability to produce high quality deep fake increases, not just by professionals. I mean, it's really gotten to the point where it can come from anywhere. So how does traditional media even possibly compete with this accelerating spread of disinformation? Like, and what's the end game? Do we end up having two separate news systems? How does that work going forward, as you say?
I think we're pretty well along the line to having two separate news systems already. I think we're almost there. Fox viewers exist in a very, very different echo chamber. You look no further than views about the coronavirus for evidence of that. But what do we do with disinformation and deepfakes? I think what the news media has to do is vet and verify and curate and help people sort facts from fiction. It's almost as if the job of journalists is increasingly going to be a verification job, right? A vetting job to say, that's real, that's not real. This is believable, that's unbelievable. It pushes us into more of a role, almost of like a librarian or a researcher to try to look and make sense of this nonsensical world. And By the way, I think some journalists are already doing that or are doing a great job of it. Mm-hmm. We're going to have a lot more Daniel Dales of the world, you know, CNN's fact checker who knows every lie Trump utters. We're going to need more Daniel Dales in the future.
Yeah. Well, but the speed of the internet and social media, it's how do you keep up with that and do your own reporting, you in the third person, obviously. It's such a complex news cycle now, and it moves so quickly. And, you know, one piece of information, I think the tech companies and social media companies are doing a better job of fact-checking Trump, especially on you know, a lot of his misinformation. But there's a lot of stuff that falls through the cracks, and that worries me, not for lack of effort by the news organizations. It's just the volume and the speed at which this stuff comes at you. How do you pick and choose what to check and what not to check?
What to check? That's a huge part of the problem. And this is partly why I often try to say, when I'm speaking to the general public, when I'm speaking on CNN, there's a reason why Americans have relied for decades on the New York Times and CNN, the Washington Post and NBC and ABC. These are old fashioned brands that are newly relevant because they try to get it right. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, in this social media chaos, this sewer, where the Washington Post looks just as important as my blog, you know, I love your mom, but your blog is not as accurate or reliable as the Washington Post. You know, it is a huge problem that they all look the same. A conspiracy theory looks the same as a well-researched story. And I think what we have to do in this environment is say to the public, go back to those old-fashioned brands that are old-fashioned for a reason. They've been around for decades for a good reason, because they know how to do this work. But that's only a partial answer to your question. What you're hitting on is something really difficult, which is, what happens when there's more fakes than there are real stories? Right. What happens when there's more noise than there is something worth listening to?
Right.
And I think the platforms have a huge responsibility in that regard to try to help.
Yeah. And sometimes, you know, some of these fakes will get past you like poison ivy. It sticks and it spreads quickly. And then it's, you know, your fact check, which is accurate, is a little too late, because it's, you know, I got COVID. I got it down in Florida. And I had a person come up to me and say, oh, you know, take your mask off. This whole thing's a hoax. And I said, why is it a hoax? Well, you know, I have my right to wear a mask. And I said, yeah, but you also, there's a plus sign there. And the equation is right plus social responsibility to your fellow human being equals please wear a mask. And you couldn't get a cogent answer out of them. It's like they drank the Kool-Aid and they're just repeating what they hear. And that concerns me. I don't know how that changes, but I felt like that person's mind didn't want to get changed come hell or high water, you know? And
Right. Hey, at some point, this is a problem for the education system.
Yeah.
In terms of next generation.
Exactly.
Hey, but you're hitting on why my book is titled Hoax. I wasn't going to call this book Hoax all along. The original title was Wingmen, because people like Sean Hannity are Trump's wingmen.
Yeah.
So when the pandemic upended our lives and Trump used the word hoax to complain about Democrats and Hannity used the word hoax to complain about Democrats, what they were both saying back then in February and March, they were saying the Democrats are politicizing the virus. But by using the word hoax, I think they were also giving permission to their fans not to worry so much about the virus. You know,
right.
By putting the word hoax in the same paragraph as coronavirus, they did damage. And no amount of spin or excuses is going to take away from that fact.
Yeah, I think that's so right. And I also like the dangerous distortion of truth as part of the title. I think that's really important. Well, listen, the book is terrific, Hoax. If you haven't read it, please go get it. You can get it everywhere. Brian Stelter, great work. Keep up all your fact checking. I know it's exhausting and you probably don't see your family much, but keep and thanks for being on, man. I'm really been a big fan of yours, so it's an honor to have you on.
Thank you. I'll try to fit in a nap later today.
Yes, please. There you go. Really interesting book. He did a lot of great research. Brian did on the Fox News, how insiders feel there. It's really, really worth reading, whether you're a conservative
or not, check it out. And please check out my YouTube channel, youtube.com/PaulMercurio. And please subscribe if you can. See you next week.